This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. T.L. Williams is a former CIA agent. He retired in 2009 after a 30-year career in the agency. Zero Day, China's Cyber Wars, is his third novel. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, Matthew.
So you kind of get a sense of what the novel's about from the title, but give us a taste. Who's in it and what's the general outline?
Well, the idea is that a Chinese volunteer who has an axe to grind with his government has been working on a zero-day attack against the U.S. economy. And he reaches out to the U.S. He dumps a note in a consular officer's car in, near the consulate in western China. And it eventually makes its way to our protagonist, Logan Alexander, who's a forward-deployed CIA officer in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
They arrange a meeting to get together, kind of a scary meeting in China, and agree to cooperate. And over time, they formulate a plan to counter that Chinese attack.
Now, what is a zero-day attack?
A zero-day attack is an attack against an unknown weakness in a system.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, the zero-day attack is against a node in Ashburn, Virginia, where a lot of economic data and server farms exist, and it sort of feeds into there. So they found a way to kind of tap into that.
Now, why did you decide to focus on China, and why on cyber espionage?
Well, one of the reasons is I spent quite a bit of my time during my career in China, so I have a pretty good sense of the place. And in many ways, I view China's cyber hacking against the U.S. as almost an existential kind of threat. You know, one of the problems is, economists that look at this have said that over time, the net result of China's hacking against the U.S. has been the largest transfer of wealth in history.
Really?
Yeah, just trillions and trillions of dollars.
And they're basically focusing on businesses rather than the U.S. government. Is that right?
Not necessarily. I mean, they have a pretty deep appetite for just about anything they can go after. A lot of it is intellectual property, and so that's the private sector. It may be defense contractors stealing information about high-tech kinds of things, weapon systems. They also do probes in the event they decide they want to go after the U.S. In a way that would take out some of our infrastructure. So, for example, when the lights go out in New York, your first thought shouldn't be that somebody blew a capacitor. It might be that China's in there messing around.
The grid's pretty old, though. Are you seriously saying that you should be thinking about espionage rather than just the decrepit nature of the electricity grid?
Well, that was a little, I guess, over the top. But
right.
I would say that it should play in your analysis of what went wrong.
I guess when you think about cyber attacks, Russia has been all over the headlines for the last 6 months, really. How would you rate that as a threat versus China?
Well, they're different. One of the things I've discovered in my research is that when it comes to cyber, nation states tend to employ the same tactics that they use to pursue their geopolitical goals in other areas like, diplomacy or military, that sort of thing. So Russia has very good cyber tools, and they can be very incisive. China is more like a blunt instrument. They can throw a lot at it. They have legions of hackers. They may not have the best tools out there, but the net result is still a big impact.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. We're talking to T.L. Williams. He's a former CIA agent, talking about his book, Zero Day, China's Cyber Wars. It's the third in a series of novels he's written. Now, you had to submit your manuscript to the CIA for vetting before it could be published. Did they cut anything out of it?
Well, that's the interesting thing. I had written two prior novels, which also were submitted to the CIA, and they were pretty much reviewed within 30 days, and nothing was excised. They had this book, this manuscript, for 2 years, and nothing was excised. So, I never really was able to figure out what was going on. To the best of my knowledge, in 2015, when this originally would have come out, former President Obama and Chinese President Xi Jinping were in the midst of concluding a no-hack pact, which was designed to limit economic targeting on both sides' part. Mm-hmm. And that my book would have been coming out right about the time that would have been coming out. And perhaps it would have been embarrassing to be hitting them over the head with a hammer while we're trying to engage with them on it. So that's the only thing I can think held it up.
Now, after a 30-year career in the CIA, is it hard to switch off? Do you find that you still think like a CIA agent?
Oh, yeah. That part just never goes away. You know, when I'm in the car driving down here, I'm looking for surveillance.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not, I wouldn't say in a paranoid sense, but it's just a natural inbuilt kind of way of dealing with the world and looking at the world. Mm-hmm. I rarely take anything at face value. I tend to question things a lot. It does cause problems in friendships. But, yeah, I'm not trying to run operations against my friends, but you do have a mentality that, that just sticks with you, yes.
And I read that you're involved in a group that protects native turtles in Florida. Does your CIA training come in handy for that?
Well, only in locating their nests.
Right.
Yeah, my wife and I both get involved in turtle conservation. We belong to something called the Michler's Landing Turtle Patrol, and it's part of a Florida-wide organization and actually international organization to protect sea turtles and to mm-hmm. collect data on them. But the CIA piece doesn't come into that into play too much.
But just coming back to this notion of being steeped in the culture and thinking about this for, you know, a good part of your life and then retiring. And I read, too, that you're part of a bunch of groups for alumni of intelligence agencies.
Oh, right. Foreign Intelligence,
right.
FEO.
So, I mean, is it fairly common for former agents to just have to keep some aspect of that going, at least talk about it?
Well, I think what happens with AFIO, which is the Association of Former Intelligence Officers, you know, when you leave whatever your parent organization was and you were working on intelligence issues and maybe being really involved in something that was dramatic on the international affairs, you don't have that when you go out to little communities, and that's just not a part of daily life there. So mm-hmm. Typically, I think people that that want to keep that up will join an organization like that. And maybe on a monthly basis or a quarterly basis, they have a chance to get together and talk about, you know, have a speaker talk about international affairs. And it's not so much that you're keeping your hand in it. It's just that you have an interest in those areas, and that's one way to pursue them.
I wanted to ask about some contemporary things with the intelligence community, and particularly President Donald Trump. There seems to be a bit of a running feud between the president and the intelligence community. Just looking at some of the tweets he made right before he was sworn in, he commented on what he called, quote-unquote, intelligence briefing on so-called Russian hacking was delayed until Friday, perhaps more time needed to build a case. Very strange. And then he went on to make some other tweets later on. I mean, what do you make of this feud between the president and the intelligence community?
Right. Well, it doesn't seem to be limited just to the intelligence community. It seems to be pretty much everybody. But I do think he came out pretty harshly against the intelligence community. And we began to get snippets of that, I think, during the campaign when, you know, when he was the Republican candidate, he was offered and availed the opportunity to receive intelligence briefings. He kind of scoffed at that and didn't take them. I'm not even sure that now as president that he's getting the president's daily brief. So he has this sense, I think, a lack of appreciation for what intelligence can do for him. And I think it's coupled with a belief that the intelligence community is the source of all these leaks about the Russian-related information, and that they have it out for him, and that this is some, you know, big effort to discredit his election. My experience in the intelligence community, working at CIA, is that it's an apolitical organization.
Right.
Oftentimes, your director is political in the sense that he was appointed by the president, and there may be some cronyism going on there, or whatever. But I think in this current director, Mike Pompeo, he certainly has some creds. If you look at his tenure in the House, he was on the Select Committee on mm-hmm. Intelligence, and he was on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence.
So he's respected by the intelligence agencies.
I think so. I think the intelligence professionals would look to him to provide really strong leadership. The question I would have to ask is he the kind of person, I don't know him personally, but Can he speak truth to power? Or is he someone who's looking for a sinecure and he doesn't want to rock the boat? We've seen with some of the other more recent picks, the most recent national security pick, for example, on the National Security Council, this seems to be an outspoken individual who mm-hmm. isn't afraid to say things that run counter to what the president's saying. And so hopefully he'll be able to walk that tightrope there while maintaining the confidence of the president, but also telling him, you know, the truth about what's going on and providing strong leadership to the workforce at CIA.
Given the turmoil that it seems there's been with this friction between the president, the White House, and the intelligence communities, are you somewhat glad that you're not a professional anymore?
Honestly, I think it would be a really difficult climate to work in. I was reading a piece in, I don't remember if it was the Times or the Washington Post yesterday. There was a story about a career CIA officer who had spent some time on detail to the National Security Council, and he had expected to spend a full career at CIA, and the caustic climate caused him to basically reevaluate that, and he mm-hmm. tendered his resignation. He just said it's such a dark, disrespectful environment. I can't see myself being there for 4 or 8 years.
Well, T.L. Williams is a former CIA agent. His newest novel is Zero Day, China's Cyber Wars. Thank you so much for coming and speaking with us.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Still to come, George Grossman grew up behind the Iron Curtain in what used to be Czechoslovakia. As a teenager, he listened to the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. And when his family moved to Israel in the early 70s, he formed a band playing the likes of Deep Purple. Now Grossman, who lives in Winter Haven, plays music in an older tradition, the jazz of Django Reinhardt. Grossman joins us in the studio and performs some tunes from an upcoming album. That's when Intersection returns.